It's time for this week's Sports Lit 101. Bruce Pratt with us here in studio. What are we doing this week, Bruce?
We are talking, as soon as we get online with folks, we're talking about business the NHL way, lessons from the fastest game on ice. And the written by Rick Burton and Norman O'Reilly. Rick was on with us before doing poetry. He's a very good poet, and we have had Norman in here. He's the Norm is the dean of the Graduate School of Business at the University of Maine. And what they've done is they've written a book which looks at the way the NHL conducts business with a cold and sometimes dispassionate eye, which I think is a really good way to do this without getting too much of their own love of the game of hockey mixed in. And that's not easy to do, to look at it, because I know for me, I looked at some of what they wrote, and I still despise Gary Bettman from the soles of my feet to the top of my head. I think he's a fraud. But they have pointed out that some of the labor dust-ups over time may have put the NHL in a much better position than they would have been otherwise. Rick is with us now. Hi, Rick. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us. I was just saying to Rich that one of the things that's, I think, remarkable about your book is the way you can take a cold and dispassionate look at some things that involve a sport that you clearly love. And that's not an easy thing to do, to not let the fan overwhelm the journalist. So I wondered if we could begin by talking a little bit about why it took from 1925, from the Hamilton Tigers strike, to 1992 to have any real unrest in the game of hockey.
Well, I think if you look at all of organized sport, the owners have really had, an awful lot of control. And really, until we get to free agency, we can talk Curt Flood and baseball and, what ultimately happens with Andy Messerschmidt and Dave McNally. Until we see free agency, it's very, very hard to imagine the players having much influence or ability to dictate the narrative. And I think that once we get into kind of what I'm going to call the modern era, you start to see the power shift taking place in all of professional sports. And the owners are still wealthy. They're all billionaires. We're looking at Ottawa right now. The franchise probably will go for north of $900 million for a team that is essentially a small market club. But I think in a long way of saying that the players have only recently found their voices. And I'd make a case that they lost to the NHL, as recently as the 1990s.
Yeah, well, they in 92, I mean, they had their 10-day strike, which didn't really resolve much. It left a lot of stuff on the horizon, especially to do with shared revenues and the like. But then we get, but they make it till 94, 95, and then that's where we get the 53-game season. Alan Eagleson had retired in, 91 or 92, and Bob Goodenow came in as their representative, the players' representative. And it seemed to me that's when the words salary cap sort of became the worst part of this whole discussion, that became so much of it.
Well, I think Commissioner Bettman comes over from the NBA, and he had played really a major role with David Stern in creating what I think could be said to be the first salary cap. And in fact, I think in the hardcover book that you've got a copy of, we give a lot of the credit to the NFL, and in fact, we really should be giving it to the NBA. I mean, the paperback version of the book that's going to come out in October, we're going to address that and give a lot more of the credit to David Stern and Gary Bettman at the NBA. Commissioner Bettman comes over to the NHL 93-94 and brings with him that concept, and I think understands exactly how to get some cost certainty for his owners. And in both of those leagues, basketball and hockey, the owners were really quite willing, I think, to outspend the marketplace, and they were driving up salaries in a way that was not sustainable for either league, and hence we get this, what to some people is a dirty word, salary cap, but to the owners starts to become at least a way to control costs.
Well, yeah, and I think it's interesting you mentioned that Bettman came over from the NBA. I've always felt he was a double agent, but that Stern sent him over there to make sure we didn't catch up to basketball. But one, I think, could argue that the NBA has less player strife than any of the major four leagues, and I'm wondering if some of that has to do with the fact that Stern was a little quieter, out of the limelight kind of guy, whereas Bettman has that grating personality at times. And I think after the 94-95 strike, it was bad enough. But after the lockout of 2004, hockey took a real hit then.
It did, and there's no question. Anytime you take the product off the shelf for an entire year, people are going to be angry. And we write in the book about the fact that there are still fans that are bitter about that. However, and this is either to the league's credit or the viability of the sport, ticket sales and revenues and sponsors came back stronger than ever after 2004-05, to the point that we now see the league announcing last year that it did in excess of $5 billion in revenue, and they'll go over the $6 billion mark fairly soon. So one could argue, not comfortably, but one could argue that lockout of 2004-05 ultimately delivered a stronger, healthier NHL, but it didn't do anything for fans liking, what had gone down.
Well, another thing I was going to ask you about the NHL and business is, I mean, a lot of former players are coaches in the NHL and general managers. I mean, I think, Steve Yzerman and Drury and some of these other guys that are very active in building teams, even going back to when Phil Esposito was in the game. Do you think that there is that's going to make for a smoother labor and owner relationship, or do you think it in a sense may make it even a little tougher?
Well, I think it makes it a little tougher because you come across the table, you switch sides, you go from being a player and possibly one who was very involved with the union and whatever was the collective bargaining agreement of your era, and you switch sides and you become kind of a confederate of the man, right, of the owner. And I'm using the man probably in a sexist way, but I don't think we have a female owner yet in the NHL.
No.
And we can hope for one, by the way. But what we see is that general manager or that president of club operations, their paycheck and their continued work as an employee depends on them satisfying the interests of the owner. Now, to talk about foreign engagement or foreign, management, I think, and correct me on this if I'm wrong, because we've just put an addendum again into the paperback version. I think the only European, the first and only European general manager is our guy with Columbus, with the Blue Jackets. And I'm not going to attempt to pronounce his name because I'll butcher it, I'll Americanize it, and you might do a better job than I would. But I believe he is the only European-born general manager in the NHL.
Well, you mentioned the international. I was going to bring that up. There are not a lot of international players in the National Football League. There are Canadians, and there have been players from other places. Baseball doesn't have a slew of European players. Certainly, it's had players from South America and the Caribbean and Central America and parts of Asia. But hockey is probably, if you look across the globe, around the globe, hockey and basketball are played more places than either of those other two games. Do you think that the international impact, the impact of international stars, which goes back, I suppose, to the great Red Wings teams with all the Russians, has also changed business? I mean, when you're in Europe, you can watch NHL games on TV. I have not seen a baseball game when I've been over there.
Well, I'll tell you, and you're really on a hot topic that I enjoy discussing, and I think it's one where I tell my students at Syracuse that, we are in a global economy, and that if your brand or your product isn't globally available, you've got inefficiencies, and without me sounding like a professor, which I am, if you're inefficient in capitalism, you'll eventually put yourself out of business. Capitalism thrives on efficient suppliers. And I think hockey and basketball have a real advantage going forward across the next 20 years because those games, hockey and basketball, are played much more internationally. Basketball certainly played all over the world, like what we call soccer, and the rest of the world calls football. But hockey has really got that whole Northern Hemisphere piece. And what's exciting now is even seeing the NHL announcing that in September, they're going to play a game in the Southern Hemisphere. They're going to go down to Australia, a place that I know really well, and play a game in Melbourne. And I think that that speaks to the globality, to the point you've just brought up, and one that I agree with you with wholeheartedly, that's a real advantage for the NHL.
And I'm wondering, sort of a marketing question. My niece is the head marketer for Liverpool Football Club in the U.S. She's young and brilliant and the like. And when she left Madison Square Garden to go to work for Fenway Properties, I said, what are you going to be doing? She said, well, I'm going to be taking care of marketing for the Liverpool Football Club. And I said, well, I assume that you're moving to London, right, or Liverpool. And she said, no, I do it from here. It's for our U.S. marketing. And I wondered, and I still wonder, if there are any NHL teams that are marketing themselves that way in Europe.
None that I know of. I mean, Norm and I wrote, and Norm O'Reilly deserves a huge amount of credit for the book that, you know, we're in the process of discussing, and we're co-authors. But Norm and I did a column for Sports Business Journal and talked about now more than ever the NHL could be looking at expanding into Europe. The NBA has talked about it for a long time. You need the stadiums. But we started off the column by saying, you know, a Norwegian, a Swede, and a Finn walk into a bar, and you're waiting for it to be an inappropriate joke. But the way we wrote the column was that they are three billionaires, and they've decided that they want to put a team in Oslo, in Stockholm, and in Helsinki. And they have friends that they think would support teams in other parts of Scandinavia, or let's spread it down to Munich or Frankfurt or Berlin, or London, where you've got, you know, professional stadiums, and you could create a division that had six teams in Europe. We think, and we say it in the article, that the NHL being the first into Las Vegas should allow them to be thinking about could they be the first one into Europe. By the way, your niece being with Liverpool and being in the New York office, I think her job is to start eating America's lunch, to start taking market share from whichever anyone would consider to be the weakest league doing the worst job of talking to the next generation of sports fans, which would be 10-year-olds who are starting to develop their fan avidity for different teams. Hmm. And to your point, Manchester United, City, Liverpool, Chelsea, Tottenham, Arsenal, Bayern Munich, Inter Milan, FC Barcelona, Real Madrid, all of those teams I think are doing much more to come into the United States than any of our leagues or teams are doing to go into Europe.
Well, that sort of brings me to my last question I wanted to ask you, and that is, when we look around the globe and we look at the success of hockey, is it almost, I mean, there's no shortage of players anymore. There are players everywhere. There are players in Europe. There are players in Russia. And I keep them out of Europe because I don't think of them as thinking of themselves these days as part of Europe, except when they try and grab somebody else's country. But as hockey becomes more global, do you think that the NHL alone can handle that kind of expansion, or do you think inevitably we'll be looking at the NHL having the Stanley Cup, and then after that they play somebody else for a different kind of world title?
Well, you know, I ran the Pro Basketball League down in Australia for many years, the Australian NBL, National Basketball League, and it is the infrastructure costs of running a league and running it successfully and running it at parity with a league like the NBA or the NHL, massive and almost unimaginable. Probably the second largest league in the world would be the KHL, the Continental, and of course they're in a lot of trouble because of the war in Ukraine. And after that, you kind of get to the AHL. So I actually think if we have a business school orientation to this, you're talking mergers and acquisitions. if the KHL wasn't in Russia, you'd be asking, should the NHL acquire it? Now, there are Swedish leagues and Norwegian leagues, but none of them kind of have the cachet that the NHL does. So I think European expansion is quite a ways off. I think Commissioner Bettman would tell you that if he were on with us. But I think it's the kind of thing that people looking into the future are going to be saying, leagues of their nature cannot be just limited to one, you know, geopolitical area. You know, in our case, the NHL is essentially a two-country league. What you see with UEFA, you know, which covers kind of all the soccer leagues of Europe, is a confirmation. That's the wrong word, but a gathering of teams from all over Europe, which I think is what we're going to see at some point in the future for hockey.
Well, Rick, thank you so very much. I really enjoyed reading the book. I don't think I can become a Gary Bettman fan, but I understand your logic, and I was pleased to be enlightened in many ways, and I hope we can talk to you and also talk with Norm again sometime.
Well, I appreciate it, and if you can give it a plug every now and then, Business the NHL Way by Norm O'Reilly and Rick Burt, we'd sure appreciate it.
We're pluggers. You can count on it. Thanks, Rick.
Thanks so much, guys.
That's Rick Burton with us here in Sports Lit 101.